Today is Father's Day. The Lord's been talking to me about that. And I suppose I have an unusual Father's Day message. I think I will begin with the 20th chapter of Exodus, which of course is the Ten Commandments. And just read one verse of Scripture, 12th verse. It says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." Ten Commandments are the supreme moral law of the world. They are God's, one of the first full demonstrations that he gave of his character. I don't know where we can shine this, guys. Right up there? All right. God deals on the family plan. Always has. Started his world with a family. We started over again. He started with a family. When he was ready to call out a people, he did that with a family. And his church, he made to be all one family. Isn't it interesting? The holiest name that we have for God is Father. And it is a evident token of his will that he gave that name to some humans as well, and we could be fathers. His way is a mystery, and people try to cast it off, but try in vain. I mean it this way. God put it in a father's heart by nature to love his children. Now, I've read you the commandment. And religion sometimes seems a lot like commandments. But in reality, it's an awfully lot more than that. It is the essence of what life is. The stuff of life, the thing that makes life worth living, is love that people have toward one another. It colors everything we do. It is the rudder. It is the destination. It is the thing that makes life valuable. I wouldn't want to live in a world with no love anywhere. To be incapable of love would be one of the most awful places you could imagine. And why? Because God created us that way. It is natural for a father to love his children. It is natural, profoundly natural, for children to love their father. I'm thinking of a builder I worked for one time. He was a playboy. He spent a lot of money on himself. I was working for him in December. Christmas time was approaching. And he had on his desk there a picture of about a 10-year-old girl. So I asked him about that one day. I said, "That's my daughter." "So where's your daughter?" "Well, she lives with her mother. I see her two or three times a year." And then he proceeded to tell me about his father. His father was a wealthy man. His father had an excellent business. This man was probably in his middle 30s at the time. He was grown. He had children of his own. He had a life. He was making a lot of money. And you would think that he would have found it fulfilling. But the pain in his face when he told me about his father, the accent in his words was still very evident. He said, "I'm going skiing at Christmas time. I don't have anybody to go home to, so my dad doesn't want me." And I wanted to say to him so badly, "What about the picture of this little girl on your desk? Aren't you kind of neglecting her the same? Aren't you kind of handing her the same kind of medicine that you were handed?" But he never said a word about that. All of his emphasis was in what he had missed in his relationship with his father, and I have gone away thinking about that many times through the years. how that longing in a child to have the love of a father is so profound, so deep, that it's something God put there. It is about Kate, Beanie, and I. And if, for some reason, a child is denied that, children who are adopted, children who, something happens to their parents. Oh, I remember reading a story a young woman wrote about a book that Cornelius Ryan had written about The Longest Day. The assault on the beaches in Normandy described the actions of a certain sergeant. Didn't say much about it, but he got a letter back after the book was published from a girl. She was a grown woman then. She said, "I always resented my dad because he was a sergeant and he was killed that day," and said he wasn't there for me, and said it changed my life when I read what he'd actually done. And it felt differently, but there was a longing there. Children who are denied their parents look for them. There's something, a void that's never filled somehow. I think of these things and I marvel at how much just sheer pain there is in the world. And I wish it weren't that way. I don't think God, when He created His world, intended for so many people to hurt so much over the distortions and the changes of the relationships. Now, I don't know whether Adam and Eve would have ever had children if they hadn't taken of the fruit. I know that they had a relationship with God and He was their father. But it's very certain that an awfully lot of emotional pain has come into the world since that time because God created the need to have such a great love between father and child, and things are disrupted it and changed. And it hurts. It hurts when that happens. So the Lord, He deals in His universe as He wants to, but one of the things that He gave us in it is that He commanded us, honor thy father and thy mother, because there is a blessing in doing that, because it will keep you from a lot of the trouble that's in the world. Save yourself a lot of pain. God give us good fathers. We need them. It would be easy to say things complimentary of fathers today. There are many complimentary things to be said of them. But I want to talk a little bit, by the Lord's help, because the Lord's been dealing with me about it very strongly, of the separation, of the change that happens when it's time folks grow up and they go their different ways. I remember when I became a teenager. My father sat me down one day, and my father, in the course of his work, visited about 30 different families in our community every month, maybe more than that. And enough so that he was intimate with the things going on in their lives. And he said, "Son, I've watched these teenage boys and girls as they grow up. There comes a point where they get in conflict with their parents. Very few of them I've seen that didn't have that kind of experience. And there's some rough years in through there that, and there's some hurt dealt out on both sides, and then if they're fortunate, they grow up past that, and then they get established in life for themselves. Is that the best humans can do? Or is it possible to go through those teenage years without the heartache? I didn't succeed." That's the honest truth. I quarreled with my parents. When I got older, I regretted it bitterly. It was a foolish thing to do. They had my best interests at heart. Whether or not they were always wise in the way they administered my best interests, there is no question that my parents loved me. Well, what about you? Did you have some parents who loved you? It's a valuable thing if you did. God put it in people's hearts to love one another. So now I want to show you my picture, if I can make it focus right. You've seen it before. It's a Norman Rockwell painting. And it's about separating. Can you see that? Anybody? Can't see it? Need to adjust it. good enough. It's one of his famous ones. Some say his most famous. It's a boy leaving home. I don't know if you can see all this there. He's got a suitcase there beside him. Right here on the suitcase, he's got a little flag. It says state. So Mr. Rockwell's trying to tell us that the boy's on his way to college. Now that time comes, whether you're going to college or wherever you're going, there comes a time when children grow up and they have to take their place in the world. It's a mistake for parents to try to control their children's lives too much. I remember when I was working at the University of Kansas Medical Center, who's in lieu of military service, and the staff told me about 19-year-old boys coming in there with their mother and dad still holding their hands on both sides. And they said, this is going to be a shock because those parents are going to have to go home and these boys are going to be in a big city by themselves for the first time. And it would have been better if their parents had let them have some experiences in life without somebody there holding their hand. By the time you're 18 years old, the time Brother Sammons was 17 years old, he'd been on a warship and been halfway around the world. And there comes a time when you're a man and you have to take your place in the world. Or a woman, you have to take your place in the world. And that's what's going on in this picture. And this boy, as you can see, is leaving home. My picture's not clear enough to tell it, but he's got his lunch there on his lap. And he's looking to his right, my left, because that's where the train's coming from. And if you can see the expression on his face, he's eager. He's looking forward to it. Because all the time he'd been growing up, he's been under somebody else's rule. Now, I don't know if you can see this dad's shoulders or not, but they're stooped. And he's got on old work clothes and old work shoes. And his hands you probably can't see very well, but those are big hands. And they're calloused. And it's like he's used to working with his hands. Most likely at the time this picture was painted, most fathers of the age that man was didn't really have a chance to get a college education. And so they probably worked on a farm or some other kind of work that they did with their hands. The marks of his toil show all over him. And you can see he's not nearly as interested in when that train is going to get there as his boy is. And this, just enough in that picture to tell you, almost certainly, this father has been teaching the boy to do some things he didn't really want to do. Most boys don't have it in them to just want to work. They'd rather play. They'd rather sleep in the morning than get up and have to go milk cows or do the kind of things that work on the farm involves. Lots of the work in this world is just hard physical labor, digging ditches, swinging hammers, cleaning up messes here and there. Fathers learn to do that. Fathers have a dream. A good father has a dream, a plan for his family, somewhere he's trying to go with his life. And for his family's life, that's what being a father is. It means that you're looking at each one of your children and you're trying to figure out what's best for them and that you also have a plan for yourself, a way to make a living in the world. I'm thinking of one man I know whose dream is a farm. His force of character and personality are so strong that his love for his farm has bent everyone around him into being involved in that farm in one way or another. And people get tired of that. People grow up to the place and they want to see what the rest of the world looks like. It's quite natural that they should. And dad's got no choice. The train's going to come. The boy's going to get on it. And he's going to go his way. Because that's life. And it's got hurt in it. Do they have to make it worse by quarreling? Do they have to make it worse by doing it with conflict and disagreement? The scripture said, honor thy father and thy mother, that the days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. I'm thinking of what my father told me. And I mention it again. He said, of the people that he knew well, very few had children grow through the teenage years without coming into conflict with their parents. And he said, son, I hope you and I can do that. I told my children that when they got old enough to be in those years. Wanted to be a good father to them. Wanted them, you know, when Father's Day rolls around, it's an emotional time. I care about Father's Day. I care about To me, I'm less concerned maybe with the day than I am the love that's supposed to be embodied in it. I want my children to reach out to me. I've made sacrifices for them. More than that, they're part of me. I live my life through them. I want them to share their life with me. The whole point of my little message this morning is, folks, none of us are in this world by ourselves. What we do affects other people. We Americans are taught, almost from the cradle onward, to be independent, to think freely for ourselves, and yet, none of us are. We have the capability of making someone else's life awful, nearly unbearable. And we also have the capability of being very fulfilling and satisfying to someone else. One of the most satisfying things I have found in my life, not money, never had much of it anyway, but even when I had some, it wasn't there, or new things, it's having grown children come home and let me see the world through their eyes. They take the things we have given them and go out and meet life with it. And it's a pleasure. Once I had to guide them. Once I had to show them right from wrong. Now they can come back and tell me what they did with the things that we gave. It's one of the greatest pleasures that there is in life. That lies ahead for these two. If they can get past this emotional time without conflict and quarrel with one another. One of the saddest occasions that I can remember in dealing with father and son. Mind a man I had to visit one time, had cancer. He wanted help in his soul. Spoke to him about the things of his soul, what he needed to do. He repented of everything he could and worked his way around through the list and finally said, "What about my son? What can I do about my son? What's the matter with your son?" "Oh," he said, "the last time we saw," he said, "we don't talk. We don't get along. The last time we saw each other," he said, "my son took a tire tool and put me in the hospital." And he said, "I don't have contact with him." I said, "Well, can you reach him?" He said, "He won't return my calls. Letters come back unopened." So he did everything he could, and he died because he had cancer, and he died. And I preached his funeral. My son came to the funeral, and I watched him walk up to the casket and try to get in it with his dad. And I saw the tears running down his cheeks, and I saw him begging, "Dad, I'm so sorry. If I could just have one more chance. If there was just some way, I wish I'd never said to you what I did. I wish I'd never done what I did. I regret all the hurt that the old devil has brought into this world." And it isn't necessary, folks. It isn't necessary. If we'll take God's way, He'll save us from an awfully lot of it. It's natural that we go through the stages of life. We all do. And there will come a point in time when all children grow up and go out to take their place in the world. But it doesn't have to be in a hurtful way. It can be in a way where parents got their hand in your back and they're supporting what you're doing. Instead of being something damaging and hurtful, it's a blessing. It takes a while. There are some adjustments. It's tough when one of the children leaves home. There's empty plate at the table, an empty bedroom. Mother go up in that room, I know, and sit down on the bed, cry, look at the pictures on the wall, and think about the times when she held that little boy or that little girl in her arms and all the things that passed between them. Watch them grow up. She'll cry some, but you can accept it. If they're leaving in the right way, you can accept it and support it. The devil is trying to distort that. He's trying to hurt us. Well, I said it's an odd Father's Day message. It's been strong on my mind, and I say because in my spirit I can feel that the devil's trying to do that to some of us. There's some he'd like to steal. Some he'd like to take away. So Father's Day may be an opportunity to remind us none of us are alone. We have the capability of hurting other people by the decisions that we make. And I could be specific about it. But I'll reach into the past instead and put it this way. I don't have a quarrel with this picture. I know this time comes, but understand the emotions of both of these men. And my comment about it is that when the time comes, we're wise for father to do it in a way that's supportive to his son. and for son to do it in a way that's not rebellious against his father. You can't rebel against your parents without rebelling against God. They just go together. So let me tell you a story. My father was acquainted with Sister Ruby Stover's father. And his generation went back almost to the edge of the Civil War. I'm an old man too. When I was very young, there were still Civil War veterans living during my early part of my life. And I had the opportunity one time. My father had learned some songs from Brother Trimble, Sister Silver's father, because he was a working cowboy, and they learned those songs, sang them around the herd at night and things like that. And my father learned a number of them from his generation. And then I had the opportunity a bunch of years ago to hold a little revival meeting here at Neosho. Brother Amos Porter was living. I stayed in his home. And I mentioned one of these songs to him. My father had part of the words, but Brother Porter said, "Oh, I know it all." So he sat down and wrote it out for me. It's a Civil War song. I'm not trying to embarrass anybody today. I'm trying to only bring home the poignancy and to help us see what the devil will do to us if it can. Some have said that it's the greatest anti-war song that's ever been written. And the title of it is "The Boys in Blue." I'll not sing much of it to you, but I might sing a little. The song says the office had just opened when an old man, worn in years, has entered, and on his careworn face was a look of grief and fear. And as the clerk approached him with a tear-dimmed eye, did say, "I'm looking for my boy, sir. He's coming home today." "You've made a slight mistake, sir. I'd like to have you know this is an express office and not the town depot. And if your boy is coming home," the clerk with smiles did say, "you'll find him with the passengers in the depot or the way." "But you don't understand me," the old man shook his head. "He's not coming home as a passenger, but by express instead. He's coming home to mother." The old man softly said, "He's coming home in a casket, sir. He's coming to his dead." Just then a whistle pealed the air. "Express train," someone cried. The old man rose up hastily and quickly passed outside. As from the coach a long white box was lowered to the ground, the scene was quite heart-rending to those who gathered round. See, during the time of war, the politicians and the leaders, and sometimes there's great cause, stir all the fires of patriotism that they can. It takes something pretty strong to make somebody willing to go and do what people do in wartime. And the causes seem noble. Maybe they were valuable. They did to both sides. I had ancestors who fought for the South and other ancestors who fought for the North. They seem important. They seem noble. I've read a story about a minister in New England somewhere who delivered a Sunday morning message to his congregation during the Civil War, and then when he finished, he started taking off his clerical garb, whatever it was, and underneath he had on a blue Union uniform. And he was on his way off to the war. It was a war that decreased the population of this country by 10%. Many a young man left home, has sent a few letters back, and then just vanished, and his parents never knew what had happened to him. Many a young boy had that kind of fate. It's hard to resist the tide when something like that is going on. But I'm going to use that for an allegory. There's a tide running today. When in the end, mother and dad were the wisest of all. There was talk about preserving the Union. There was talk about freeing the slaves. There was talk about not dividing the country. But in the end, mother and dad looked at it and said, "It just comes down to this. This boy that we raised is going to leave. And he's going into great danger. We don't know what's going to happen to him, and we can't protect him, and it hurts." That's what it comes down to. If I'd have been there, I think we'd have been better off to do what the Quakers did than to do what these people did. They did what they could to help free the slaves, but they wouldn't take up arms because they weren't caught up in the tide of the times. They're the tide of our times too. And it's a tide so many times to pull children away from the divine, godly love that fathers have, the protection, the love, the interest, to shelter and keep you from the sin and the shame and the heartbreak and the disappointment that's out there in the world. That's what fathers try to do. But there's a tide, and it'll catch you. Human reason is not strong enough to deal with the tactics of the devil. There comes a time of separation. It's a very dangerous time. Parents are wise to do everything they can to build for that time. Build as strong ties as you can. Make as much love as you can, because there's going to come a point when those children are going to make their own decisions and go their own way. And if they don't love you, or if they have got evil in their hearts, you can't stop it. They're subject to go the way that they have in mind to go. Don't handle him so roughly, boys, for that's a romping jack. He went away as you are now. See how he's coming back. He's broken his poor old mother's heart. Likewise, mine's broken too. She said he'd come home to us dead when he joined the boys in blue. I'm telling you this morning that you can be caught in some things that'll steal what's most precious and valuable to you in your lives. The youth, the beauty, the strength, the opportunity to make something of yourself. Two or three critical decisions. At a time when the tide's running strong and the pull is great, it's hard to resist. Two or three critical decisions can put you in a place where you can never, ever get it back again in a whole lifetime to fix it like it needed to be. And the devil knows that too. One of the greatest defenses that we have against it is the love of a father and a mother and the place God gave us with them. He gave us some advice. Don't put tears in your parents' eyes. Father's Day is a good time. Get out and barbecue and hand out cards and tell Dad how much you love him. And I'd do it too if my dad were still here and my children do it with me. It's a good time to do it. But the real essence of what's needed on Father's Day goes a lot farther than that. It's a commitment to the values. To the values. To Father, yes, but to the values of right and wrong. The greatest Father of us all is our Heavenly Father. His way alone is right. In following His way, we find peace to our souls. In following His way, we avoid the pitfalls and snares that do so much to destroy in life. I know it's a quaint little message, maybe not very impressive to you. I wish you could feel the poignancy of it. I have a great burden. I'm afraid. I'm afraid because I see the devil trying to hurt us. And been looking at the ceiling at night and calling some names in prayer, because I know the devil's working on us, and I can feel it in my spirit. Folks in trouble. God have mercy on us. It looked so reasonable to this young man, but in the end, it only came down to one thing. Mother and Dad were there, and he left, and he never came back again. And he couldn't ever fill that place. All the sunshine of the life had gone out. That's what the devil's trying to do to some of us. And life being what it is, most likely there'll be some who slip away into that kind of place. Would God that the love of fathers and mothers, the love of the saints, the love of the truth would be strong enough to build a barrier and to protect and keep us. If you've got a godly father, thank God for him. If you're in a place where you don't have a godly father, ask God to have mercy on your soul and let him be your guide. His ways are just and right, and he'll lead us in a way everlasting. That's my little message for this morning, and I thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention. I can't tell you all the burden that I have with it. My heart would be, I wish we could sing. I wish folks would come and pray. I know that it's hard to do it on a Sunday morning, but I wish we would, because we need some mercy. Because the devil's trying to hurt us. And the best defense that we have is not words. It's not just a cookout on Father's Day or lunch somewhere. It's God Almighty. And it's us humbling ourselves before Him and taking Him to be our guide in life. He'll protect you, folks. He'll lead you in a way. You can actually come to a place as a young person where you lose your life and your parents grieve that you're not there anymore, but they don't grieve that you're lost. And to the worst things that can happen in life, it's all better if the Lord is with us in it. And in most of our cases, it won't be the worst things. The Lord will take whatever we have in life and make something beautiful out of it if we'll put it in His hands. Listen to the voice today. Amen.